Welcome to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Today it's the uncertainty of Obamacare. Ask a group of people operating at the highest levels of the healthcare industry about the business outlook today, and you hear one refrain.
The uncertainty.
It's very unclear.
Well, you listen, we're entering a period of uncertainty here.
The uncertainty and where things will end up is unclear.
This quartet of voices represent the healthcare industry, federal regulation, America's hospitals, and academia. And of the uncertainty, they are in agreement. No one knows how a big chunk of an increasingly significant part of the U.S. economy is going to look like in less than 1 year. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and by extension, health care. The federal law that requires almost all Americans to have health insurance or face a fine has faced uncertainty before, through Supreme Court challenges and congressional funding fights. But President Donald Trump and congressional Republican leaders have vowed to repeal and replace the law, and the lack of specifics around that effort is where the uncertainty lies for the healthcare industry, businesses, and patients. After all, the law has changed the health business a lot in the almost 7 years since President Obama signed it into law. And how it will be changed in the next few weeks and months will ripple through the economy.
It impacts not only the business of healthcare, but ultimately it impacts every other aspect of the business sector.
That's Steve Ullman. He is a professor at the University of Miami School of Business. He's been studying the business of healthcare for more than 30 years. And like the teacher that he is, Ullman likes to use metaphors when talking about the complex worlds of health and economics.
It's sort of like the game that some of us play as children or adults called Jenga, playing chess. You have to know what the following moves are going to be.
Thinking of the healthcare industry as a board game may help make the complexity relatable. But for South Florida, the economic stakes around the uncertainty of the Affordable Care Act could not be any larger.
The uncertainty is definitely more pronounced in the state of Florida and in South Florida.
That's thanks to the sheer number of people who are insured through healthcare.gov, the federal government's marketplace for individual health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. Of the more than 9 million people throughout the entire country who purchased health insurance through the federal website this year, almost 1.8 of them are in Florida, making the Sunshine State home to the largest number of people participating in what's called the federal marketplace. And South Florida has the highest number of enrollees in Florida. One out of every 13 people nationwide who bought plans through healthcare.gov live here in South Florida.
There's this whole intermeshing of what's going on in the healthcare sector and what's going on in the business right now. You cannot separate the two.
Steve Ullman from the University of Miami points to the use of the tax code for individuals and companies, consumer-directed health insurance plans, and employer-mandated coverage as just a few ways that health and business have become more and more intertwined, leading to more and more uncertainty with the future of the Affordable Care Act. It's simply a mystery right now for employers, healthcare service providers, patients, and insurance companies.
They have no idea what's coming next.
That's Kathleen Sebelius. She was Health and Human Services Secretary under President Obama when the Affordable Care Act and healthcare.gov first rolled out.
And in 3 months are supposed to file rates for 2018. I think the likelihood of a lot of companies just saying, we're on the sidelines, we're not going to risk our financial underpinnings by playing in this very uncertain world is high.
In fact, we've heard from some health insurance companies already that they are not waiting around for the repeal and replace effort to take shape. Humana has said it will be out of the Obamacare market next year. Now, Humana has had a relatively small footprint in the Obamacare market here in Florida, but another insurer, Molina, has said it could pull out of some markets next year. Now, next year for the Affordable Care Act is coming, sooner than next year even. That's because the process for insurance companies to propose plans and premiums for next year normally would be underway right now.
March 31st is really too late. Early in March is better, but we need to know something in March because some of the first filing deadlines are April.
Marilyn Tavener is the CEO of America's Health Insurance Plans. That's an industry trade group. Here in Florida, insurers face a May 3rd deadline. That's when any Affordable Care Act health insurance plan is due to the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation. Now, that office then has until August 21st to review the plans and decide if they can be sold on healthcare.gov in Florida. So while the debate on Capitol Hill rages, the clock is ticking. Health insurers have a matter of just weeks to answer some big questions that could impact health coverage for more than a half million South Floridians.
It's whether or not you stay in the market. And then second, it's what is the price of the plans and what do the plans look like?
But it's not just insurance companies and their customers left without answers right now. It's the broader healthcare industry that cannot get a handle on this part of the business. Rick Pollack is the CEO of the American Hospital Association.
There is, a lot to be determined here. You know, should things change on the coverage side? I suspect there will probably be transition periods as opposed to anything happening, on an immediate basis. But the structure of all of this is really so unclear at this point in time.
You will hear that uncertainty over the next hour from these four: Rick Pollack from the American Hospital Association, Marilyn Tavener from America's Health Insurance Plans, former Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, and Steve Allman from the University of Miami School of Business. All four will be participating on Friday in UM's The Business of Healthcare Post-Election Conference. We spoke with them separately to gauge all of this uncertainty and its potential impact on business and the economy here in South Florida. Still to come, talking with the Cabinet Secretary, who presided over the disastrous rollout of healthcare.gov and the questions the program continues to face.
What do you do to the workforce? What do you do to the overall economy if you take away coverage from the 20 million people who have it? How does that impact our overall economy, and how does that impact taxpayers who will end up picking up the bill?
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. Kathleen Sebelius knows the challenges and pitfalls of Obamacare. She was the one charged with overseeing its rollout as Secretary of Health and Human Services back in 2013. She had to deal with that disastrous rollout of healthcare.gov in the first year. 6 months after it began, she resigned and has fielded criticism ever since about the premium price hikes and the narrowing of health insurance plans offered in the subsequent years. Measured by enrollment, the first 3 years of the Affordable Care Act have been a success in Florida, certainly. In 2015, about 1.3 million people got coverage. This year, that's jumped to almost 1.7 million, even as the total number of Americans signing up for coverage through healthcare.gov is lower this year than it was in the first year. Now, Sebelius blames the national drop in enrollment on the Trump administration canceling advertisements for the Affordable Care Act in the last week of enrollment. But that did not hurt sign-up numbers here in Florida, at least the total number. Double-digit price hikes and monthly premiums also have not hurt enrollment numbers, even though the uncertainty of next year looms large over the program.
Most individuals who participate in marketplace plans are not paying 100% of the premiums charged. They are being subsidized.
Pardon the interruption, Secretary. About 90 to 95% of Floridians that participate do not pay the advertised premium. They pay less
Correct.
Than that because of the tax subsidy. But it is a
government. And as the rates go up, the subsidy goes up. So for a lot of individuals, while there were rate hikes based on, as I say, a lot of companies looking at what were 3 years of experience and saying, okay, we probably priced too low coming in. We want an adjustment. The customers who pay for those premiums on a monthly basis are not experiencing a 14%, a 20% rate hike because they have subsidies that went up. But getting more companies to compete,
they're not
is
experiencing
critical.
That price increase as a customer, but they are experiencing that price increase as a taxpayer.
Correct. But I would suggest that as a taxpayer, we're all better off when people have some form of payment under their health care. We were, as taxpayers, arguably paying 100% of the costs of uncompensated care, of people who went into hospitals and couldn't pay their bills, of people who sought emergency rooms instead of primary care doctors, of workers who weren't as productive as they could have been because they had health issues and couldn't get them dealt with at an early enough basis. So that was 100% on taxpayers, 100% on people who either had any health insurance or paid their taxes. We are a whole lot better off with hospitals who can collect their costs from paying customers, from people who actually get preventive care at a much earlier stage and can remain productive in the workplace. So there's a cost of doing nothing. There's a cost of not having coverage at all. And what's very unclear going forward is, what do you do to the workforce? What do you do to the overall economy, both in the healthcare sector and for all of us taxpayers, if you take away coverage from the 20 million people who have it? How does that impact our overall economy, and how does that impact taxpayers who will end up picking up the bill?
There have been some broad strokes that have been sketched out by the leadership of Republicans in the United States House of Representatives. And some of those broad strokes have been to eliminate the individual and employer mandate penalties. In addition, they have talked about providing access to a monthly tax credit for Americans that would be portable toward health insurance that would essentially cut across an individual health market or even the employer-based market where the majority of Americans that have private health insurance get health insurance. How could that impact health services delivery?
Well, again, until you know what the subsidy rate is, it's pretty difficult to make assessments. But let's assume that they move forward with some kind of plan that is within the outlines. What Speaker Ryan has said, and it seems to be his plan that provides the basis for some of this, is that the tax subsidies would not be flexible by income. They would be based, there would be a little variation based on age, but none based on income. So you would have potentially a person making 100% of poverty, which is about $12,000 a year, getting the same tax subsidy to buy an insurance plan as somebody who makes $150,000 a year. One would argue it's less likely that the person at the low end of that income ladder would be able to afford the premium charge, because the premiums wouldn't vary by income. And if you don't get an additional tax break, you're likely to be out. And if there's no penalty, you're likely to be out. So we would once again, very quickly, I think, return to the days where the healthy and wealthy would have coverage in the individual market, and those who were older, sicker, and certainly lower income would quickly drop out of the market. They would lose that 85 or 90%, as you said, in Florida, of people who now have income-based tax subsidies and go back to a place where if you can afford it, you're all set. If you can't afford it, you're out of luck.
What we've been able to learn about those broad sketches of the Speaker Ryan plan is that the Republicans would continue to feature two relatively popular features within the Affordable Care Act, allowing dependents up to the age of 26 to stay on their parents' plan, as well as allowing folks to get coverage with no regardless of pre-existing conditions.
Well, I have to tell you the second piece of that. The kids on their parents' plan is very doable, is very easy. And that's just putting people on employer-based coverage. Let's make that very clear. If their parents have an employer-based coverage plan, they can go on their parents'
plan. Right, that's
plan.
Unrelated.
A lot of kids.
Yeah, it's an Obamacare feature, but it's not related to healthcare.gov.
Correct.
Yeah.
So if you look directly at the marketplace, those individuals who are purchasing their own coverage without affordable insurance from their employer, which is what the marketplace is about, and they don't qualify for either Medicare, federal plan for the elderly, or Medicaid, federal plan for the low income, they're in that kind of in-between group. They are really at jeopardy in this proposed marketplace, because people, I have no idea what it means that you would force insurance companies to sell policies to people with pre-existing conditions if you don't have some kind of corresponding responsibility provision that everybody has to be in.
So this would be the individual mandate matched with the pre-existing condition mandate.
Correct. Well, it's really a three-part law. Is everybody's got to participate. If you can afford coverage, you got to be in. Secondly, insurance companies can't pick and choose who gets coverage based on a pre-existing condition. And third, people who don't have employers paying a share of their coverage need some help financing their coverage. So those are the three pieces. If you take away two of the three pieces, I think this whole thing just doesn't work.
Well, you know, and the Republican plan talks about keeping the pre-existing condition, a portion of it, eliminating the individual mandate, and then reforming or changing the subsidy portion of it.
And I don't have any idea, again, Tom, I'm a former insurance commissioner. What you would basically have is insurance companies, I guess, running high-risk pools for wealthy folks.
Now that you've had Secretary Sebelius some time away from the administration, some time away from Washington, how would you change the Affordable Care Act? How should the Affordable Care Act, if you could, how would you evolve it?
Well, I certainly think offering additional incentives to insurance companies to participate would be a very good idea to get more companies in the market, because competition in a marketplace, the states that have a lot of companies competing for customers actually have the lowest rates and the best choices for consumers. I think more needs to be done about the high out-of-pocket costs. The Affordable Care Act took a step in that direction by capping on a yearly basis what people could pay for deductibles and copays out of pocket. But what we hear, both from Obamacare beneficiaries and from people in the regular market, is that they are paying way too much out of pocket, that employers have shifted to high deductible plans, and a lot of people just can't afford it. And third, I would definitely include a drug pricing provision, a way to lower out-of-pocket costs, a way to lower drug costs, and a way to make sure that overall coverage is more affordable going forward. It can be done, but actually it requires more government intervention, not less.
And more government involvement in health insurance seems unlikely, given the repeal and replace effort picking up steam even this week in Congress and in the White House. That was former Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius on the uncertainty of Obamacare. Still to come, how the health insurance business is preparing for what may come.
I don't believe the individual market is in a death spiral. It has been a market that has existed for a long time.
This is The Sunshine Economy, The Uncertainty of Obamacare. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening to WLRN. In fancy terms, insurance is about risk transfer. It's an agreement for someone to pay someone else to take a financial risk. For car insurance, it's the risk of a car crash. For health insurance, it's the risk you'll get sick. In life, risk is just a fact of life, right? Insurance tries to put a price on that risk and in some cases limit the financial risk. Marilyn Tavener is the CEO of America's Health Insurance Plans. That's a trade group representing the health insurance industry. Some of those companies are turning away from the risk in the Obamacare insurance market even before its fate is known. Aetna's CEO said the affordable care market is in a death spiral. Humana and Molina have cast doubt on whether they will compete for customers, assuming there is some form of Obamacare next year.
The uncertainty is part of the problem. We need some predictability. I've asked that we have predictability that's known for an 18-month period, a two-year period, because we are entering the season, particularly in the individual market, where health insurance plans have to price products and design products for 2018. And in fact, some of the filing deadlines are as early as April. So there are certain things we don't know. We need to understand what is going to happen with cost-sharing subsidies and reinsurance funding, because that funding, which is critical to about 70% of those individuals on the exchange, goes into the pricing. And if that funding is not present, then first of all, plans have to decide if they want to stay in this market at all, or if they want to try to price over that funding, which would mean premiums would go up
at a considerable pace for 2018.
It gets complex pretty quickly when talking about insurance for insurance companies, and that's what that reinsurance portion is talking about. When the health insurance companies whose names are on the plans go out to another insurance company to look for that insurance, that's among a big cost input into that premium that folks will see online. But isn't the big issue whether or not there is even going to be an individual mandate and a need for a healthcare.gov or a marketplace in 2018?
Well, certainly the individual mandate has been a big concern, because obviously what you're trying to do is you're encouraging healthy individuals into the plan or into an exchange, as well as those who have chronic care or other needs. And part of how insurance works is it's a combination of healthy individuals and unhealthy individuals. You spread the risk and the cost. And yes, it will have great importance to whether or not plans continue to offer the individual market and the exchange product in 2018.
Marilyn, is the guidance for insurance carriers, health insurance carriers right now, to assume everything remains the same for 2018 until you see some plan from either the Trump administration or congressional Republicans?
There was a proposed rule that cleared up some of the technical concerns that insurers may have had, which were adding to premium increases. And that was an important first step. But the second part, which has to do with reinsurance funding and cost-sharing subsidies, you cannot assume that it will continue, because there's actually there has to be an appropriation by Congress to continue cost-sharing subsidies. There needs to be a signal by Congress in this administration about the reinsurance funding for 16, where the payments made in 17. So these are the kind of things they cannot assume. And so each plan obviously operates individually and has their own business model. But right now, I would say plans are holding up on pricing or their decisions to stay in the market until they understand what the funding is going to look like, and they cannot assume it's in place.
Do your partners that belong to the American Health Insurance Plans Group that you head up, do they ask for delays in state regulatory process for handing over their premium proposals for 2018? How is this going to play out in the springtime?
Well, I think what would happen is, you're exactly right. If we don't understand the funding, then they would speak with their individual state insurance commissioner about, can we delay our filing or our decision to file until there's some clarity from Congress? And I think that that would happen. I can't speak for each plan in each state, but I think there are some plans, they all have close working relationships with their insurance commissioner. The insurance commissioners understand what's going on. In fact, I was on a panel with Senator Alexander and the HELP Committee a couple of weeks ago, where we had the Tennessee Insurance Commissioner, myself, and also the CEO of the Health Underwriters Association. And all three of us were saying exactly the same thing. People want to be in the individual market. They want to help consumers. This is an important market, but we need to understand what the funding supports are going to be for 2018 and beyond.
Marilyn, you say the companies want to be in the individual market, but we've seen Humana pull out entirely here in Florida, which sees the largest number of participants in plans offered on healthcare.gov, the national website for the state exchanges. We've seen the number of companies participate in that dwindle over the past 3 years. So companies are actually not participating on the individual side.
Well, it is true that there have been plans who have dropped out in both 16 and 17. I think, I don't have the exact percentages, but I think we were down like 30-some plans, and that's been because of continued losses. And I think the co-op story has been pretty well known, that they actually, some of the co-ops closed because they couldn't make the funding model work. And that's why the issue of reinsurance and cost-sharing subsidy is so important. And then you have other plans in Florida, like Florida Blue, who have been very active in the individual market and have been able to price and have supports appropriately.
And I believe so that's the only insurance carrier in Florida that offers plans in all 67 counties.
I think that's right.
So in some counties, it's the only option if an individual is going to fulfill the individual mandate under the Affordable Care Act and get insurance.
That's right. And that's why we want to do things that will encourage plans to participate in the market. We want more than one plan offering
So what could those things be as you're encountering the administration and congressional Republicans that say they want to repeal and replace or reform or improve? What are those things that are going to encourage competition for the part of individual health insurance plans in a state like Florida, which is huge for Obamacare?
Right, it is. It's one of the largest states. So short term are some of the things that I've talked about, whether we handle, you know, individuals need to continue to receive their subsidies, so the advanced premium tax credits. They need to receive their cost sharing reductions, the support for lower income people, and then making full federal insurance reinsurance payments, which are what things we've talked about. These are important, but they're not sufficient to ensure a stable long-term working market. So the other things that we've talked to...
But these are all existing things right now, right?
They are existing things, but when you talk about having a repeal and replace bill, they will need to be clear that those fundings continue.
Right. So you want those to continue in any reform effort or any replace effort?
That's right. And then longer term, we've talked about things that we think can help. If you're going to go away with the individual mandate, which we've encouraged them not to do until you have a full replacement package in hand. So whether that's a two-year period or longer. But if you're going to repeal the individual mandate, then you have to look at doing other things that would encourage people to keep insurance, such as enrollment penalties or waiting periods, similar to those that are used in Medicare Part D. But we're saying it's probably not a good idea to do that until you've come up with a complete replacement or restructure or an improvement package. The other thing that we've talked about, and I think you've seen some things on this, is using the premium tax credits in a different way to encourage younger people to enroll in coverage, because you want to get a younger, healthier population to help cover the cost of an entire pool. And then some of the other things were handled in a proposed rule that the administration put out, which was an important first step. But I think there are things we will talk about longer term with this administration and with Congress that will help strengthen the individual market. I don't believe the individual market is in a death spiral if these things are done. It has been a market that has existed for a long time. There are probably up to 20 million people in this market, individual small businesses, entrepreneurs. We want to support them, but there have to be some things that are done differently. They don't have the employer subsidy that many of us have, and we've learned to appreciate, and that the employer provides a subsidy. So in some ways, the individual market has to be subsidized differently.
The employer subsidy, you're referencing folks that get health insurance through an employer, and oftentimes the company offering that insurance plan will pick up part of the cost, part of that premium, usually for the employee, sometimes employee spouse or employee family. Let's talk about that employer-provided market. Here in Florida, it's about 40% of the private insurance market. So while the Obamacare plan, the Affordable Care Act plans are very popular in Florida, certainly compared to the rest of the country, I think 1.7 million Floridians get their individual health plans. The majority of Floridians on private insurance are getting it through a company. What has been the impact, Marilyn, on the pricing for the small group plans that are offered through employers with all of this uncertainty in the Affordable Care Act and the individual market?
Well, I think it's important for people to remember that there's over 150 million, some people say 170 million people in the employer market. And the employer market has actually been pretty stable.
But to be fair, that's a national number, right? But the employer insurance market is not a national market. So while those 140 or 170 million people may get insurance nationwide, as we know, those insurance plans are not competing across state lines.
Well, this has been a conversation. There are some states that actually allow the sale of insurance across state lines. And it's, for some reason, it's never really gotten off to a great start. I think probably it's because you have to have a pretty strong provider network. And that's where healthcare becomes pretty local when you start talking about hospitals and health systems inside a market.
It's the similarities between healthcare, real estate, and politics. It's all local, right?
It is local.
Yeah. Florida, by the way, is not one of those states that allows cross-border health insurance.
They are not. And I suspect that one of the things that will happen over the next year is that Congress and this administration will pursue giving states the option to, if they want to pursue selling insurance across state lines. There's a big desire by Congress and the administration to return a lot of decisions to the state level, and that's probably one that will become a state level decision.
So back to the pricing influence on this small group market. It's a small group market that's not national, it's state and local. What has been the influence and the experience of the American Health Insurance Plans Group regarding the Affordable Care Act on the individual side and the premium increases you've seen there and the plan structure you've seen there, that influence on the small group side?
So the premium increases for this group, for employer sponsor coverage, has actually been pretty stable and has decreased over previous decades. Now, any increase is still seen as a bad thing, and certainly prescription drug costs and medical costs have started to trend upward, and so that's a concern. I think where individuals, consumers feel it differently is there has been an increase in copays and deductibles in plans now, which is part of a way of controlling cost for an employer. And in some cases that works well, and individuals use health saving accounts. In some cases, depending on their income level, having a higher copay and deductible can present problems. So what we've tried to do is design different types of plans for this market. And obviously, if the copay and deductible is less, the premium is larger, and the individual may pay it in premium, but at least give them a choice. So there's bigger concerns around copays and deductibles in this market and the changes that have occurred. But the overall cost pressures, if you will, have been fairly stable. And the other thing that was originally thought when the Affordable Care Act was first passed is that the employer market would shrink. It has not. People have stayed, and I think employers see this as an important tool in recruitment of, and retention of employees. So the employer market has stayed strong.
While the increases may be steady, that means the contribution from the company tends to go up in line with that contribution from the employee as well.
That's right. So it's still a cost concern. So I wouldn't want to say that we aren't still. Overall affordability in health insurance is something we think about every day.
Is it still affordable? $14,000-$15,000 for an average family plan nationwide?
Well, I think that no one would be interested in saying that that is an affordable health plan. So part of what we is our job each and every day is to look at what's driving the medical cost increase, pharmaceutical cost increase. How do we change the delivery system model so that we can get at this issue of overall affordability?
Marilyn Tavener is the CEO of America's Health Insurance Plans. In Florida, insurance companies have until early May to submit their plans to provide insurance through the Affordable Care Act, at least as the schedule now stands. Still to come, the talk about how to change Obamacare is concentrated on the insurance side, not on delivering actual health care.
The delivery system reforms, I think, will continue to go on.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy, the uncertainty of Obamacare. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks as always for listening. Rick Pollack does not like the limitations assigned to the word hospital. He doesn't think it captures all of the health care these businesses provide, like clinics, outpatient services, and in-home care. He's also not wild about calling them businesses either. Pollack is CEO of the American Hospital Association, and even though he hopes people have a broader concept of a hospital, he knows his industry oftentimes is where the policy of the Affordable Care Act encounters the practice of health care.
We face a lot of challenges, and perhaps the most fundamental one is in the context of the reexamination of the Affordable Care Act and how we're going to be able to preserve coverage to the 22 million people that currently were receiving coverage as a result of it.
Has the Affordable Care Act been good for that umbrella of business opportunities that hospitals have grown into beyond just that ER and the room and the other services that traditionally have defined the hospital business?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and it goes back a little bit to the Affordable Care Act and some of the strategic underpinnings of it. Whether it's good for hospitals or it's not good for hospitals isn't the point. It's what it was trying to achieve as a public policy. And what it had tried to achieve was a movement from focusing on reimbursement that rewarded quantity and to focus more on quality, that rewarded more value as opposed to volume, that promoted integrated delivery systems and coordinated care, all of which were to be done through a series of tools, tools such as value-based purchasing, tools such as gain sharing, tools such as accountable care organizations, tools such as bundling. All of those things have been positive developments, all of which we have been a part of shaping and leading. And those things were a part of the Affordable Care Act. Interestingly enough, I don't know that there are that many people that really, on a political basis, disagree with some of those strategic directions that were embedded in the ACA. And I think that that movement that was sparked by it will continue, regardless of the fate of the ACA. And some of it were things that were not only the right thing to do, but were things that the purchasers of healthcare, the employers, the insurers, the payers would have pushed us to do regardless.
There are clearly parts of the Affordable Care Act, which you just articulated, that go right at what had been the traditional business model, the traditional fee-for-service business model for healthcare providers, namely hospitals and doctors and others. And so as the business model has evolved because of the Affordable Care Act, now as the industry faces the unknown of whether or not the Affordable Care Act will be around in 2018, and if so, what the shape of that could be, how is that impacting business and delivery here in 2017 for your members?
Yeah. You know, you keep referring to us as a business. You know, we're not just an ordinary business like every other business.
You're not, but you do generate revenues. You do generate income.
Right,
you do generate sales.
Right.
So
but
in that case, you know, I work for a nonprofit as well, but it is a business.
Yeah, but it's certainly a business in that sense. But what other business takes care of everyone that walks through their door, regardless of their ability to pay? You know, we're not just a traditional business. You know, you also have to separate out the coverage issues versus these delivery system reform issues. What's controversial here about the ACA and what we have been at odds on in many ways as a nation is coverage and how do you pay for it. I don't think that some of these delivery system reforms have been nearly as controversial as coverage and how do you pay for it. The delivery system reforms, I think, will continue to go on.
It's an interesting demarcation, and I think thank you for making that separation between the coverage portion of the Affordable Care Act and the healthcare delivery portion of the reforms that the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, when you think about it, I mean, you know, coverage and how do you pay for it, that was the focus of the two Supreme Court decisions. You know, that's the focus of where people have issues over income redistribution through higher taxes to pay subsidies to people of limited means. You know, that's what the political tension has been all about.
So with the political tension that has been concentrated on the coverage side of the Affordable Care Act, in other words, the individual mandate and the 10 must-have features in all Affordable Care Act insurance plans, as that has gone into this repeal and replace effort with the election of President Trump and the Republican majorities in the House and the Senate, how is that impacting, though, the delivery side of hospitals as they try to figure out that cost structure that is so important to be able to provide those services and the reform of those services that was also included underneath the ACA?
Well, you listen, we're entering a period of uncertainty here. Not only as it relates to the future of these coverage provisions that play out in the way you just described, but also in the context of Medicaid restructuring. Remember, half of the coverage expansions came through the Medicaid program, and you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of what the Medicaid program is going to look like. Our folks need to be focused on the improvements in the delivery system that aren't going to go away, and we're going to have to adjust relative to some of these coverage discussions and the outcome of those discussions, which are very unclear at this point.
What's the guidance for the American Hospital Association to its members.
Guidance is to keep the focus on the areas that we know are areas that aren't really going to change substantially, that are the heart and soul of what we do to deliver and improve care. And that goes back to the delivery system reforms in terms of making sure that we're focused on doing whatever we can to make sure that the care process is as seamless as possible in terms of coordination, that the quality that of the service that we provide is of the highest possible quality, and that the innovative care models that make care more convenient to patients are things that we're working on.
Is there a supply side risk here, Rick? In other words, if coverage in 2018 for those millions of Floridians and millions of Americans that have gotten insurance coverage through the Affordable Care Act, if that somehow is reduced because there's repeal and replace efforts that change that, is there a supply side challenge that hospitals and healthcare providers could face in 2018, given that over the past 3 or 4 years, you've seen an increase in demand from these newly insured folks coming into the healthcare delivery system?
Whether it's our mission or whether it's federal law, you know, we are required to take care of everyone that walks through the ED to make sure that they're stabilized and get the care that they need. And so many of our organizations provide all sorts of outreach and uncompensated or charity care to individuals and clinics or in partnership with others. So, you know, one of the things about this whole issue is, you know, many people are going to still get the care. Unfortunately, if they're not covered, there are less incentives for them to get the preventative care up front, and they end up in the ED, which is why we have been so supportive of making sure that people have coverage in the first place. But at the end of the day, it's not as if many of these people aren't going to get the care.
This uncertainty around the Affordable Care Act, how has it impacted the finances and the financial futures of hospitals?
Right now, nothing has changed, and we don't know what transition periods will occur. So I would say that at the moment, it hasn't impacted, as we speak, you know, nothing has changed yet. But in terms of how it could change relative to having to absorb increased amounts of uncompensated care in the absence of these budget restorations could create real concerns. And that's obviously something that's a part of this whole debate that we're seeking to influence.
That was American Hospital Association President Rick Pollack. Still to come, as the sunshine economy, the uncertainty of Obamacare continues, the potential price of uncertainty here in Florida.
We are the most expensive country in the world for health care, and we are, in Miami-Dade, are the most expensive community in the country, therefore the most expensive community in the world.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. This week, it's the uncertainty of Obamacare. I'm Tom Hudson. As always, thanks for listening to WLRN. Over the course of a conversation about healthcare and the economy with Steve Ullman, you will hear him talk about games like Jenga and chess. He may talk about gambling or even compare healthcare to a cup of coffee. Ullman has been a professor at the University of Miami School of Business for many years, studying the intersection of healthcare and the economy. He's the chair of the Department of Health Sector Management and Policy. The university is hosting a conference on the business of healthcare post-election this Friday on campus. So, back to Professor Ullman. Let's start with that Affordable Care Act and Jenga comparison.
You have all this interconnection of these wooden sticks that allow you to sort of build and build. And then the question is, if you start pulling out a stick here or pulling out a stick there, does the whole little tower of sticks collapse? And at what point does it collapse? We're at a situation right now where we have built this fragile set of tower of sticks, and we're now going to start trying to pull pieces of it out with the hope that it will not collapse. And that's a very complex issue, a very complex game in terms of what's going on.
Using that same metaphor, it seems like under the Trump administration, they want to pull a stick out and put a new one in at the same time. In other words, they want to repeal the Affordable Care Act as it stands and replace it with something yet to be determined.
That's true. And it's unclear, as you point out, it's unclear what that replacement actually will be. There's a number of different components that are being discussed.
Those include doing away with or changing the individual mandate, changing mandated features of health insurance plans, changing how insurance companies can price risk, changing whether or not people qualify for financial aid to buy coverage, changing what that financial aid could be, changing the responsibilities of employers and the health plans they can offer workers.
There are all of these ramifications, all of these unintended consequences that occur whenever you start adjusting policy a little bit here, a little bit there. And it's playing chess. You have to know what the following moves are going to be able to play appropriately. If you don't know what those moves are going to be and the impact of that, you can get yourself in a heck of a lot of trouble pretty quickly.
We're playing a lot of board games, Jenga, and now we're playing chess here, Professor.
And the irony is that if you ask my wife, I don't like playing board games.
But of course, this is not a game. It can be life or death for some sick patients. It can be profit or loss for health care providers and insurance companies. Now, that may sound a bit crass or even hyperbolic, but it is reality in the healthcare economy.
And it's a basic premise of business that if you know where things are going, you can at least then adjust to that. If you have no idea where things are going, that's what creates a lot of issues and lots of headaches for healthcare and business CEOs.
It's not just healthcare and business chief executive officers, it's patients too. Florida is a state and South Florida is a region. We have had some of the highest uninsured rates before the Affordable Care Act came in place.
We are the most expensive country in the world for healthcare, and we are in Miami-Dade, are the most expensive community in the country, therefore the most expensive community in the world for healthcare. And yet what we get for that is very poor outcomes. We are ranked very low in infant mortality. We are ranked very low in life expectancy relative to other countries. We pay a fortune for what we're getting, and we get lousy quality.
Now, Ullman will not put any odds on what direction the ultimate outcome of Obamacare this year could be for next year. He says there's just too many stakeholders involved right now, insurance companies and hospitals, doctors and drug makers, medical device makers are involved, nurses, companies providing health insurance, and yes, of course, patients too.
Where it all comes out is going to be very curious. The realization is that the act is over 2,000 pages and the regulations are over 10,000 pages. So where all of these 2,000 pages plus 10,000 pages end up when all is said and done, you know, if there are a scrap heap on the floor that you're trying to put back together, or whether it's retaining, you're just pulling out a page here and a page there, that will determine what ultimately comes out of this.
And it could determine it very soon, as insurance companies in Florida face an early May deadline to get those plans and premium proposals in to state regulators. Wanda Miles is our technical director this week. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks as always for listening.